Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Jennifer Streaks joins us now, senior personal finance reporter and spokesperson for Business Insider. Jen, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I'm trying to figure out this headline. If you have not looked at your savings account lately, if you haven't looked at your savings account lately, you're probably losing money. You wrote this story. How am I losing money by not looking?
Well, the thing is that there was a recent survey that stated only 5% of middle-income Americans have changed their banking providers as a result of these high-yield savings accounts. So you have people that are sitting in place. They're not taking advantage of the new high interest rate. So you're losing money. Okay. So that's what that is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That means.
So, but if you have changed to a bank with a high interest product, then you're good. The bottom line here is make sure you do that or check on what rates you're getting in your savings account, right?
Correct. Exactly. Open up that bank statement, get on the phone with your bank and say, you know, am I really getting the best interest rate for my account right now, given that there are higher, percentage rates going on with bank accounts right now, savings accounts.
Yeah. And you're talking about just a standard savings account. What sort of number should I be asking for? What kind of rates are available?
I mean, you have rates that are in the 4.6 to 5%. Some of the online savings accounts are even close to 6%. So, I mean, you should definitely at least be over 4% right now.
I am surprised to hear that. I have no idea what the savings rate is my savings account is generating, but I know not that long ago it was 0.1%. It was not a tenth of a percent. That's an eye opener. I'm glad you pointed that out. What else are you guys talking about on ways that maybe we're not managing our money correctly, but would save us some if we just paid more attention?
Yeah, I mean, I also wrote a story recently on the higher rate of 401k withdrawals, hardship loans that are happening right now. And of course, it's a response to inflation and the higher cost of everyday living, everyday goods. And so we're always talking about how are you saving your money? How are you budgeting your money? You have to include, and I coined this phrase, inconvenience money in your budget right now for things that are going to take up more space, higher costs at the grocery store, higher costs at the gas pump. Even right now, we're seeing higher costs with school supplies, just random school supplies, pens, pencils, notebook paper, craft supplies are all more expensive now. So you've got to almost pad your budget to take account for that. And that's how you're going to save money instead of doing something like going into credit card debt or pulling money out of your 401k.
You pay a penalty if you take your money out of your 401k early, right?
Yes, definitely. There's a 20% penalty, and then there's a 10% tax on top of that. So you're looking at, in most cases, 30%. It is oftentimes not worth it. And then you still have to repay it. So you've put another bill on your plate, you know, which could squeeze you down the road, even if there's some temporary relief.
Understood.
Based on the money that you've withdrawn.
One last question for you. Here's just another headline. How a 30-something who paid off $100,000 of debt shares the steps she used. You can read this story at businessinsider.com, but just give me the headline on that. What's the trick to paying off $100,000 of debt?
Well, two things I really want to highlight is that she called her loan provider.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first thing, to work with her loan provider and say, you know, this bill that I have is kind of high. Understand what kind of loan you have. And she learned that she had an interest-only payment, which means that the money that she was paying wasn't going to the principal balance at all. and she actually saw her loan increase over 3 years of making on-time payments. So understand what kind of student loan you have and make sure that you are attacking the balance. She also said about a really stringent debt repayment plan because she wanted to pay it off in a timely manner. And so she put together a plan of action in terms of paying it off, doubling up on payments if she had to, and also incorporating a side hustle. There are going to be many Americans that are faced with student loan repayments starting back up again. And so you have to look at your budget, and if it's something that you're dreading, you may have to figure out a way to bring in more income. Most of those student loan payments are quite sizable.
Jen Streaks is the senior personal finance reporter and spokesperson over at Business Insider. More tips on how to whittle away at that student loan at businessinsider.com. Jennifer, nice to talk to you today. Thanks for the thoughts.
Thank you.
Here's Bree Fowler, senior reporter at CNET, joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And once again, talking about the soap opera that is X. Hi, Bree. How are you?
Good, thanks. Happy to be with you.
What's the latest on Elon Musk's company?
Well, the latest drama deals with possible throttling that might be going on. The New York Times did a study, and the Washington Post also looked into it, where it appears that Twitter was delaying, moving to other sites from a Twitter post. You know, say you want to direct people to your Mastodon or your Instagram or something else, and you tweet that out. That connection was getting very, very slow for some people, and, you know, enough that the average people were noticing it.
I can understand why Twitter would not want to direct people to competing platforms. I mean, if you were selling Coca-Cola, you wouldn't be issuing coupons or passports to Pepsi, right? Is that kind of what this is?
But you could argue that this is, you know, these are companies that have kind of drawn the wrath of Elon Musk. I mean, it's also, you know, they're saying that there's been delays in getting to specific news sites that he doesn't like. I mean, he claims that Twitter is an ultimate refuge for free speech. And if you kind of discriminate against certain kinds of posts, then, you know, that may not actually be true.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not saying he isn't hypocritical or petty. And, and you know, that just seems to be bad for business, right? Like, if that's how people are using your platform, I don't think you're doing yourself any favors by making it difficult for them to do that.
Right. I mean, it's just like all kinds of tech and business. People hate friction. They hate it when things are hard to use or made difficult, whether it's, you know, charging something on your credit card or going to different websites from a platform. People want things that are quick and easy, and anything that annoys them will drive them away.
Imagine when we first got our computers and we had dial-up. You know, you had to... And then you finally got on, and then you'd click, and after a while, something would appear. I'll bet our tolerance now is a second. If we have to wait, like sometimes when I'm downloading a video or watching a video that's going to load on my screen, and it says your video will start in 15 seconds, I'm like, nah, I'm out. I got
it. It's funny trying to explain that kind of concept to my kids who are digital natives and so used to this. But yeah, I remember using dial-up modems, and anytime there was a picture on a website, it took forever to load.
Talk about, I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but this Israeli chip maker and their relationship with Intel. What's going on here?
Yeah, Intel was set to buy this company called Tower Semiconductor. It's based in Israel, but they produce chips all over the place. And what it would have allowed them to do is, you know, make some of those older generation, cheaper chips, not in their facilities, somewhere else, give them the capacity to do that while they could focus on the high-end, more profitable, high-tech stuff. What this means for the American consumer, you know, you and me, is that, you know, right now there's still a chip shortage. We're not keeping up with production, and if there's no chips, there's nothing for everything from can openers to cars. Everything runs on chips these days. And this is also, you know, was supposed to make them more competitive with the massive Chinese companies.
So why did Intel then scrap its plan to buy this Israeli chip maker?
Well, they were getting pushback from Chinese regulators. I mean, just like how, you know, regulators in the U.S. have antitrust concerns about things, so do other countries. You know, maybe the motivations of Chinese regulators are not completely pure. That's not for me to say, but this definitely makes it harder for Intel to compete on a global level. And, you know, they've been going through some rough times, and, you know, this would have been a key part of their financial turnaround.
Well, you might not insinuate that, but the Biden administration is. Earlier this year, they passed, or at least one of the agencies in the federal government issued an order that said that we're going to make it more difficult for China to develop the high-tech chips that everybody is after. And in reading this story over the weekend, I was amazed at how complex the very complex chips are, how expensive and extraordinarily difficult it is to make the chips that we sort of take for granted, and that there's companies all around the world that either make the chips or make the components of the chips or make the machines that make the chips. And if you choke any point along that chain, you can cut off the industry or cut off a country. And that's what we're trying to do to China right now, right?
Well, I mean, I think it's more of us actually trying to ensure our own supply too, because, you know, these are not auto parts here. These are, like you said, extremely complicated, extremely specialized. I mean, you can't just build the facility to make these things. You can't have dust. You can't have, you know, contaminants. The people who build them are highly skilled in a lot of circumstances. And this has been a big thing, not just for the Biden administration, but for the federal government and for Congress in general, especially when we were worried about possible invasions of Taiwan, which is still where we get a lot of our chips.
One of the numbers I saw in that story was, here's how small the transistors are on these chips now, that a human blood cell is 200 microns across. These chip pieces are 8 microns across. They are the size of a virus. That's how small the components are to these things. I don't know what I just said, but doesn't that sound fantastic?
It's really, really tiny, and you know, you just can't start production of that, you know,
right,
at the drop of a hat. I mean, it's absolutely wild how far technology has come, and with how much power and information that you can pack on those. I mean, they always in the industry talk about Moore's Law, and it's about how just more and more stuff can just get shoved onto the teeniest, tiniest little devices.
And that's where we are today. Well, this is interesting, Bree. It's always nice to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Great to talk to you, too.
Right now, though, let's visit with Elliot Richardson, the co-founder and president of the Small Business Advocacy Council. There has been a change in the policy at the Cook County Assessor's Office. You may need to know this. Elliot, this is John. How are you today?
Hey, John. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Talk to me about this change in the Cook County Assessor's Office. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's really, really good news for our neighborhood business districts and local communities. Essentially, you know, if you walk around Chicago, especially in disadvantaged communities, John, you may see vacancy after vacancy after vacancy, right? And that's not good for local economies. It's not good for local neighborhoods. It's certainly not good for small businesses. So what the assessor's doing right now is they've changed their policy. There's a reduction in taxes that property owners can pay if their buildings are partially or fully vacant. And certainly, you know, there is always going to be some degree of vacancy that's natural. But what we are seeing way too much of is buildings remaining vacant for unreasonable periods of time. And while they're vacant, they may be receiving a tax break. So what the assessor is now doing is they're saying, look, if your property is vacant, if you're trying to rehabilitate it, if you're trying to rent it out, you can get a tax break one time for 2 years. But after that, you've got to lease it out, right? And that should address this issue of speculation and keeping properties vacant to the detriment of local communities, especially right now, and especially because vacancies cause blight, they cause crime, and they really thwart economic development.
When you say vacant properties, do you mean lots with nothing on it, vacant lots, or do you mean buildings with nobody or no business in there?
That's a great question. So right now, certainly vacant lots are a very big issue as well. This is those abandoned buildings, right, in the middle of a commercial corridor, in the middle of a street that right. should have foot traffic, should have restaurants, should have activity, but are just vacant and have been such for such a long period of time.
And are you saying, what's the tax implication? What has the tax implication been for the person that owns that property? Even though they had no tenant, nobody paying them rent, were they still having to pay a tax on that property, a property tax?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you own a property, you know, you're always paying a property tax. It's based on the assessed value, John, of the property. So there's always a reduction in the assessed value of a property based on the area and the vacancy in a particular area. How the policy has been for quite some time is a property owner can go to the assessor and they can say, we'd like an enhanced vacancy. We'd like to pay even less property taxes because our property is vacant. And again, that policy may make sense in certain situations, right? If you buy a building in a disadvantaged community and you're trying to turn that building around and bring in a small business or bring in a tenant.
Right.
The problem is if you're holding on to a property, if a property owner is holding on to a building hoping that the area appreciates and they're speculating and they do not want to go through the rigmarole of being a property owner and leasing out the space, something's got to be done with that building. I mean, it just becomes a breeding ground for crime.
And in the meantime, they're enjoying a lower or zero property tax. So there's no penalty to them for sitting on that property waiting for the neighborhood to improve, right?
Right. I mean, they're not being taxed on vacancy. And essentially what's happening is whatever rate they're paying in property taxes, it's a lower because of the vacancy if the assessor grants them that reduction. And if that is abused, it's a big issue for local neighborhoods throughout Chicago. That's why there was such a robust coalition of groups, trying to tackle this vacancy issue.
And the solution, to be clear, then, is there a limit of time for which they can get that discount? They've got to, if they're going to own that property, they need to develop that because it's going to cost them either way, right?
Yeah, so what it is, the new policies, it's one vacancy reduction, and that expands 2 years. So that spans over 2 years, I should say.
Yeah.
And then they can't get another one until they at least partially lease their property. So it should hopefully churn some of these vacant properties with the goal of transforming vacant properties into thriving small businesses.
I like the sound of this. Elliot, I'm glad you gave us a heads up on that. Thanks for your help today.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. It's a really important policy change.
That's Elliot Richardson, co-founder and president of the Small Business Advocacy Council. You can find out more at smallbusinessadvocacycouncil.org. More news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Inc. 5000 is out, and a Chicago startup ranks the highest among local companies on the list. That list ranks the fastest-growing private companies in America. Songfinch is ranked number 11 on the list. The company connects its users with songwriters who turn personal stories, poems, etc. into lyrics and then into actual songs. The company launched in 2016 and raised $17 million in a Series A funding round last year. It's grown nearly 24,000% in the past 3 years. Songfinch reported $36 million in revenue last year and is on track to do $75 million in 2023. A Chicago-based technology nonprofit called P33 has been funded by the Federal Minority Business Development Agency. The $3 million will be used to grow P33's TechRise expansion initiative, supporting underserved company founders from the idea stage to scaling their business. P33 is one of 40 free awardees nationally and the only Illinois organization selected. Underrepresented and minority founders say lack of access to capital, lack of access to networks, and lack of representation are the top barriers they face getting their new businesses off the ground. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Business of Food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And Leonard Skinnerd is going to help us out today as we thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, boys, hit it.
Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell? Yeah, since I've lived here in 2016, yearly the odor seems to be getting worse and on a more frequent basis.
The here that he's talking about is St. Charles.
My name is Mark Folks. I am a member of the St. Charles City Council and alderperson in the first ward.
The cause of the odor is no secret. It's connected to the business of food, agriculture.
For the past few years, the city has received complaints of an unpleasant odor from the Smithfield processing plant.
What's it smell like?
Oh, it's tough to really describe. It's very unpleasant. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. Sometimes it smells like sewage, kind of unpleasant meat odor, that type of thing.
Yuck. What's being done about it?
Smithfield came in a couple weeks ago to our city council meeting to kind of describe some of the steps they are trying to take, but members of the 1st and 2nd Ward in St. Charles are getting a little frustrated.
Well, the odor is coming from meat processing, which is a smelly business. Is this something that really can be solved?
They've been a wonderful community partner. Both Smithfield and the city, you know, we're trying to work together to get this resolved. But, you know, recently, and I'd say probably in the last year to year and a half, it has really become very noticeable.
Is this affecting property values?
Not sure. But it's one of those things that I'm speaking for myself here. I'm fearful of, you know, that if this smell continues to be there, what will it do not only to homes, but what will it do to businesses around that area? People have invested in certain spaces, and if that smell continues to emanate, I'm kind of fearful for what possibly could happen.
Yeah, good luck to all in St. Charles. From the farm to your belly, today is National Hazy IPA Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Robert Passan is the Chief Wagon Officer. What a fun title at Radio Flyer. Hey, Robert, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, John. Great to talk with you again.
Yeah, no kidding. I always enjoy talking to you. You bring out the child, I think, in me.
That's my goal.
You guys have a new store that's opening up, right?
Yeah, we are so excited about it. We're going to be opening up our first ever Radio Flyer store at Woodfield Mall in November.
First ever brick-and-mortar location?
Yeah, yes. We have wanted to do this for years. Some people have said, why has it taken so long? I said, it's only taken 106 years since my grandpa started the company. But we have so many new products and so many exciting things that we just, and we've had so many requests from our fans and customers that they want to be able to come to a place where they can check out our products, ride our products, and it's going to be really fun.
So how have we been buying Radio Flyer stuff in the past?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we've always sold the biggest retailers. You know, our big customers today are Walmart, Target, Amazon, places like that. And then also we sell direct to consumers on radioflyer.com, and we've done that for a long time also.
I see. So a brick-and-mortar location at Woodfield Mall. A lot of folks go there. You got a lot of space. So you must have a pretty big footprint, though, huh?
Yeah, the store is going to be about 15,000 square feet. And one of the really cool things about the store is that in the very center of it, there's going to be a test track. and on that test track, kids can ride go-karts. They can check out our scooters and tricycles and products like that. And also, there's going to be a whole section of the store that's a bike shop, because a couple of years ago, we got into making electric bikes for adults. And our electric bikes are really focused on families and helping families replace car trips with bike rides. And you can do a free test ride of an electric bike at our store. Many people haven't ridden an electric bike, but when you do, you realize it's really an amazing product.
What are your best-selling products?
One of our best-selling products is a newer line of wagons called stroller wagons. And as the name describes, you can push it like a stroller or you can pull it like a wagon. They fold up. You can travel with them. They've got all kinds of really cool features for families on the go. And we're going to have our complete line of stroller wagons. We just launched kind of a really awesome ultimate stroller wagon that we're calling the Voya, which has all kinds of great features. That's one of our best sellers. Another one is the go-kart I was describing to you. And one of the really cool things about the go-karts that you're going to be able to check out in the store is that people will be able to customize them and kind of design their own graphics for the go-kart, and that's available only in the store.
Is the store open now?
It'll be opening in November.
Wow. Well, that's too bad because Christmas is just the next month. So, gee, you'll probably be real crowded with people coming in for Christmas.
Yeah, that's the goal. And we're going to have a lot of things that are available only in the store, like other personalization things, gift items, things that are perfect for the holidays, for baby showers. It's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah. Do you still have just a good old-fashioned wagon?
We do. We have it's called our model number 18, and that's the iconic red, shiny steel wagon that everybody thinks of when they hear Radio Flyer. And one of the fun facts about the model number 18 is that it's been in production since the 1930s, and it's so iconic that the actual shape of the wagon is trademarked. Just like the Coca-Cola bottle is trademarked, that Radio Flyer wagon shape is trademarked also.
One last thing. You guys are headquartered in the Chicago area, are you not?
Yeah, we are. We've been in Chicago since my grandpa started the company in 1917. We're at 6515 West Grand Avenue. We've been here since the 1930s.
And how many folks does Radio Flyer employ these days?
We've got about 100 people who work here, and the biggest team is the product development team, and those are the designers and engineers that come up with all of our great new products.
I want to do that.
It's very fun.
Robert Passon is the Chief Wagon Officer, Radio Flyer. So do you have a specific date, November 2023? This November, Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg. What's the grand opening day?
We're saying the first week of November because we don't have an exact date yet. And as we all know, construction can vary a little bit, but we're shooting for the first week of November, and we'll announce the actual date closer to it.
I'm anxious to hear that, Robert. Thanks for giving us the heads up.
Thank you, John. Great talking with you.
Robert's the Chief Wagon Officer, RadioFlyer.com.